ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
First, I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all the assembled Vaishnavas who are the most worshipable in the universe. Hare Krishna. Tonight we'll hear directly from Krishna as he's speaking to his dearest devotee, Sri Uddhava. And this conversation occurs in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna covers many subjects, and thankfully Uddhava has asked questions. Devotees mercifully thinking of the whole world ask a variety of questions so that Krishna can explain for everyone's benefit the process of advancing in spiritual life. There are lengthy conversations about process of karma and yoga, jnana, that Krishna and Uddhava discuss. And there's a very short chapter on bhakti, which Krishna describes as the topmost. It always strikes me when hearing this chapter about how simple bhakti is. After all, we see that even Lord Ramachandra gave preference, he gave deference to even subhumans because of their simple bhakti. As mentioned in the Shastra, when Lord Brahma and other great personalities in the universe came to offer their respects to Krishna, to place their golden helmets on his lotus feet, he was not as attentive as when his great devotee Hanuman came to Lord Ramachandra, that is, and offered his simple service. So bhakti is based on sincerity of heart, as we'll see from this chapter. And I think it's such a short chapter and so sweet that we can recite all the verses together, at least up to the point where Lord Krishna stops speaking and Uddhava then begins to glorify Krishna's answers. And this you'll find in the 11th canto, 29th chapter. And the title of the chapter is Bhakti Yoga. And I thought it would be helpful because our system is bhakti. And by hearing Krishna's instructions, we can get a feeling for his teachings. Even someone who's hearing for the first time can get an understanding that it's a very simple thing. And there are certain activities that one can do, but they're based on principles of sincerity and humility that help one to advance by performing those processes. So we can read the English translations together, starting with text 1. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, I fear that the method of yoga described by you is very difficult for one who cannot control his mind. Therefore, please explain to me in simple terms how someone can more easily execute it. O lotus-eyed Lord, generally those yogis who try to steady the mind experience frustration because of their inability to perfect the state of trance. Thus they weary in their attempt to bring the mind under control. Therefore, O lotus-eyed Lord of the universe, swan-like men happily take shelter of your lotus feet, the source of all transcendental ecstasy. But those who take pride in their accomplishments in yoga and karma fail to take shelter of you and are defeated by your illusory energy. My dear infallible Lord, it is not very astonishing that you intimately approach your servants who have taken exclusive shelter of you. After all, during your appearance as Lord Ramachandra, Even while great demigods like Brahma were vying to place the effulgent tips of their helmets upon the cushion where your lotus feet rested, you displayed special affection for monkeys such as Hanuman because they had taken exclusive shelter of you. Who then could dare reject you, the very soul, the most dear object of worship, and the supreme Lord of all? You who give all possible perfections to the devotees who take shelter of you, who could be so ungrateful, knowing the benefits you bestow? Who would reject you and accept something for the sake of material enjoyment, which simply leads to forgetfulness of you? And what lack is there for us who are engaged in the service of the dust of your lotus feet? O my Lord, transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science could not fully express their indebtedness to you, even if they were endowed with a prolonged life, Brahma, for you appear in two features, externally as the Acharya and internally as the Supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you. Shukadev Goswami said, thus questioned by the most affectionate Uddhava, Lord Krishna, the supreme controller of all controllers, who takes the entire universe as his plaything and assumes the three forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, began to reply, lovingly displaying his all-attractive smile. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, yes, I shall describe to you the principles of devotion to me, by executing which a mortal human being will conquer unconquerable death. Always remembering me, one should perform all his duties for me without becoming impetuous. With mind and intelligence offered to me, one should fix his mind in attraction to my devotional service. One should take shelter of holy places where my saintly devotees reside, and one should be guided by the exemplary activities of my devotees who appear among the demigods, demons, and human beings. Either alone or in public gatherings with singing, dancing, and other exhibitions of royal opulence, one should arrange to celebrate those holy days, ceremonies, and festivals set aside specially for my worship. With a pure heart, one should see me, the supreme soul, within all beings and also within oneself, to be both unblemished by anything material and also present everywhere, both externally and internally, just like the omnipresent sky. O brilliant Uddhava, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who, by taking shelter of this divine knowledge, offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. Such a man sees equally the Brahmana and the outcast, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. For him who constantly meditates upon my presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with false ego, are quickly destroyed. Disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, one should give up the bodily conception and its accompanying embarrassment. One should offer obeisances before all, even the dogs, outcasts, cows, and asses, falling flat upon the ground like a rod. Until one has fully developed the ability to see me within all living beings, one must continue to worship me by this process with the activities of his speech, mind, and body. By such transcendental knowledge of the all-pervading personality of Godhead, one is able to see the absolute truth everywhere. Freed thus from all doubts, one gives up fruitive activities. Indeed, I consider this process, using one's minds, words, and bodily functions for realizing me within all living beings, to be the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. My dear Uddhava, because I have personally established it, This process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Certainly a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process. O Uddhava, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful, and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation. That activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they're externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. Thus, I have related to you, both in brief and in detail, a complete survey of the science of devotional truth. Even for the demigods, this science is very difficult to comprehend. I have repeatedly spoken this knowledge to you with clear reasoning. Anyone who properly understands will become free from all doubts and attain liberation. Anyone who fixes his attention on these clear answers to your questions will attain to the eternal confidential goal of the Vedas, the supreme absolute truth. One who liberally disseminates this knowledge among my devotees is the bestower of the absolute truth, and to him I give my own self. He who loudly recites this supreme knowledge, which is the most lucid and purifying, becomes purified day by day, for he reveals me to others with the lamp of transcendental knowledge. Anyone who regularly listens to this knowledge with faith and attention, all the while engaging in my pure devotional service, will never become bound by the reactions of material work. My dear friend Uddhava, have you now completely understood this transcendental knowledge? Are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled? You should not share this instruction with anyone who is hypocritical, atheistic, or dishonest, or with anyone who will not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, or who is simply not humble. This knowledge should be taught to one free from these bad qualities, who is dedicated to the welfare of the Brahmanas, and who is kindly disposed, saintly, and pure. And if common workers and women are found to have devotion for the Supreme Lord, they are also to be accepted as qualified hearers. When an inquisitive person comes to understand this knowledge, he has nothing further to know. After all, one who has drunk most palatable nectar cannot remain thirsty. Through analytic knowledge, ritualistic work, mystic yoga, mundane business, and political rule, people seek to advance in religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But because you are my devotee, whatever man can accomplish in these multifarious ways, you will very easily find within me. A person who gives up all fruit of activities and offers himself entirely unto me, eagerly desiring to render service unto me, achieves liberation from birth and death, is promoted to the status of sharing my own opulences. Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing these words spoken by Lord Krishna, and having thus been shown the entire path of yoga, Uddhava folded his hands to offer obeisances, but his throat choked up with love, and his eyes overflowed with tears, so he could say nothing. So now we'll stop there. And did some of it stick in your mind? All right, so just take a few minutes. Make groups of four. You can turn around and make groups of four. And with four people, discuss what you heard. And go ahead. Just turn around and find four people. Make sure you don't leave anybody out. Get together with four other people. Don't leave anybody out if you see anybody there. And just see if you you can talk it over and find out what you heard. There's some devotees in the back, in the very back. Find what the main points were. Krishna, Krishna. So one more minute. And those of you who are at home on the internet, hope you're discussing with somebody at home, and you can text in anything that you heard that stuck, and we'll go over it in more detail. Hare Krishna. All right. So we have some microphones out there. Let's hear some reflections and see what you cooked up. Go ahead.
We were just discussing about a couple of verses, and what struck our mind was verse number 2 and 3, that we should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, he mentions. And
verse 2 and 3.
of Srimad Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Of the chapter we were just reading, yes, verse 2 and 3.
And also Krishna says in this chapter itself, text 18, talk about me to my devotees.
So what about verse 2 and 3? What did you, why did you pick 2 and 3? Why did you, what did you hear there that you appreciated?
These verses are very similar to the Bhagavad Gita verses where Krishna says that instead of doing dhyan, you should do bhakti and focus on my lotus feet. So just a little detailed description is here, whereas in the Bhagavad Gita is just a simple sutra there.
So why did you pick them though? What attracted you to these verses?
To focus our mind, we should focus at Krishna's feet, which is called lotus feet, because everything about is about him is so absolute and beautiful. And the chapter itself is Bhakti Yoga. So I think somehow both of these, we have to focus at Krishna to do Bhakti.
So focus is the primary point. Yes. That there are other processes, you said, are mentioned by Krishna in various places. And here he's giving a conclusion, saying how to focus on him by loving devotional service, yes, seeing him within all beings and yes, so forth, right?
Yes, yes. One more point we came to, we all of four of decided on, like zeroed on. He talks about, Krishna talks about this in Bhagavad Gita. He says, talk about me to my devotees. And here also it's like a little bit more emphasized that talk about me to my devotees. And he also says not to share with who are not in bhakti and not in yogic and people who are not very like envious kind of people, you should not talk about me to them. So I was just relating, when we were just talking, we were relating that, okay, whatever is mentioned in Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is more highlighted and more detailed. He's just emphasizing more than do this, don't waste time.
Okay, Kameshwari had a point.
So we were also discussing, and the point came up is that Lord Uddhava, talking about Lord Ramachandra, that he was so merciful, he even considered devotion amongst, simple devotion even in the monkeys, and Lord is so merciful, but then Uddhava is inquiring, how can I actually understand and please explain to me? And Lord's answers are very, very beautiful. But then another point, also I want to mention one point that Mataji is mentioning, that also we discussed, is about not mentioning this process to those who are not humble and hypocritical, and those qualities that Lord is mentioning. But we were discussing that when we go out in book distribution, actually we don't really... Mataji had a question, she was asking how can we know who is who. And actually, when we go out, we don't really see what is their quality as such, but we see that on a high level, everybody's looking for happiness, and that one particular point that they can connect to. And to coming to her question that how can we say, but when we go revealing advanced stages of the process, probably that is what we can refrain at the initial stages. And she can ask her question more, but this is what we were discussing.
So I think, Hare Krishna, my question was, so I work with a population...
You have to put that mic in front of your mouth.
Sorry. I work with a population where they don't believe in a lot of things, but when I talk to them, I feel like if they knew what I'm coming to know, it would be so good, it might help them. So when that words came out where he says, don't share it or don't give this knowledge to those who are hypocritical, envious, and who are dishonest, how can you make that decision that someone is, you know, how can I make that decision that they don't deserve that, or they don't, I can't give it to them? Because there's a chance that someone can change if I only can expose them to that knowledge. So how do you answer those two?
No driving in the temple room, please. It's an art. Teaching Krishna consciousness is an art. And it takes a while to learn that art. Just like in cooking, people who cook for some time know by sight how much spice to put in. And you watch them and you think, how did you know? And it says, I just know. I've been doing this for so long. So similarly, those who teach Krishna consciousness to others develop a sense. They become empowered to develop an understanding. They become empowered and develop an understanding of people's level of receptivity. And the scripture is very clear about becoming sensitive to people's levels of receptivity, and that those who are not interested or those who are envious then should not be force-fed, because then you risk the chance of them becoming offensive, and because of that, then waylaying their process of devotional service. So you have to know when to back off also. So you have to develop that sense by seeing, after offering some information, if they're receptive or if they become disturbed by it, then you can then act accordingly. So you have to probe a little bit. It's like a doctor. When you meet a doctor, he or she will ask you, how are you feeling? What are your symptoms and so forth? And after diagnosing, then give the medicine, right? So same thing. When we're teaching Krishna consciousness, often it's helpful to diagnose the person first. After getting to know somebody just a little bit, or learning how to sense what their temperament is, then administering accordingly. So some people need to start on a different level. For instance, some people, you just have to be nice to them to develop a friendship, because they may not want to hear about Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we find that when children of parents become devotees, well, most people are children of parents, aren't they? But when one becomes a devotee, oftentimes one wants to go back and teach one's parents or siblings about Krishna consciousness. And it's often the case that they're not receptive because of the relationship. They feel like, you're my kid, you don't tell me, I tell you. And therefore, one may simply be an ideal son or daughter and go on practicing Krishna consciousness. And when the parents appreciate your character and quality, oftentimes they also begin to develop an appreciation for Krishna consciousness. So that can be that's an example of a strategy. You're preaching Krishna consciousness, but it doesn't mean you force it upon them. Sometimes in early days, including in my own case, when I went back, my mother and father saved letters that I wrote to them right after I joined the Krishna consciousness movement. And they were quite direct. And also, I've heard many other cases of children who, upon taking up Krishna consciousness, then wanted to convert their whole family and began preaching very directly. And they didn't have ears for it. So it takes discrimination, it takes practice, it takes some intuition. You just have to be sensitive and think what's best for them, how to bring them along. What other things did you... Kurunath Prabhu, please. We need a mic in the back as quickly as possible.
I like the part about with singing and dancing and displays of royal opulence to celebrate the days that are especially the festivals that are set aside for Krishna's worship. And Mother Uttama was saying, you know, that Srila Prabhupada taught us how to do all these things. That this is like, it's this description of what we do in ISKCON. You know, we learn how to have festivals. And Krishna says, even if externally they appear useless, that they're actually they give the highest benefit. So people might say, well, why are you doing this big Rath Yatra parade or something like that? You know, what is it, you know, how is it increasing the gross national product or whatever? But it's actually increasing the consciousness, awareness of Krishna in everyone's heart that's making everyone peaceful and happy and guiding them on the path to all success in every endeavor that could be attained by yoga and jnana and karma and so forth.
Very nice point and very sweet that Krishna recommends himself that the process of bhakti includes celebrating these days. So that's something you can easily incorporate into your life. Just put it on your calendar. And if it's on a Thursday, tell them you're not coming in. That's bhakti. It's like, on these days, I do my service to Krishna. And if you do that, even during Kartik, it's mentioned in the Kartik Mahatmya again and again and again, thousands of verses. And so many of them are about the glories of offering a lamp during Kartik. And so Krishna has specific requests, celebrate these holy days. And how do you do it? With a festival, offering a feast to Krishna, offering chanting, hearing all day, flowers, staying up till midnight, and things like that. Worship Krishna. So it's good to know that Krishna recommends these things himself. Thank you, Karunath Prabhu. Very nice. What else? Yes.
Yes, Maharaj, so in a couple of verses in this chapter, Krishna pointed out that you should realize me in everyone's heart. I am situated in everyone's heart.
Hold that a little closer. We have to, let's do microphone 101. Microphones don't work out here.
Sorry.
Here. They work here.
Okay.
So if it's actually touching your chin and facing up, if it's up here, it may be too loud, but right underneath your lower lip, do you see where that is?
Yeah, that is much better.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just repeating what I just said, that in a couple of verses, Krishna pointed out.
Move it down a quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Okay, so in a couple of verses, he pointed out that you should realize me in everyone's heart. By doing that, you will remember me and also you will get rid of all envy. So that is the point that I liked. And another point that I want to share is that...
Wait, why did you appreciate that point? The first point, why did you notice it? Why did you bring that point up?
Yeah, because I... In social dealings with many people in this world, we tend to get into the situation where envy and anger manifest from our heart. But if we think from the perspective of Krishna situated in his heart, we realize that whatever feelings that we exhibit is not realistic.
Does that even apply when driving?
Yes, yeah.
That could work while you're driving a car?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
We should mention this to the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yeah.
As a panacea. Okay. So you noticed it because you've seen the tendency, and you said we have the...
Yeah.
So you've noticed in yourself also a tendency that you could become envious or angry with people.
Yes.
And you saw this as a possible way in which you could neutralize that tendency.
Yes.
By remembering Krishna.
Yes.
That is within their heart. How does that work?
Even though Krishna is situated in the heart, the soul is conditioned by the affection of modes of material nature. So the soul is pure, but because of the modes of material nature acting on him, person sometimes get into...
But I'm asking, psychologically, why is it that if I suddenly remember that Krishna is within the heart of a person, now I'm able to step back from envy or anger? Because I'm assuming a kind of interpersonal clash. Mm-hmm. I feel envy towards somebody, or I feel angry at somebody, and then I feel the urge coming into my mental system. Possible?
Yeah.
Please say yes.
Yes.
Then I suddenly remember this verse, and I remember Krishna is within the core of that person's heart. And according to this verse, because of that, I'll be able to overcome that strong impulse, that wave of anger or envy. Why? Why does that help? You started us off in a really good way. Let's go back. Yes, go ahead.
You're not going to behave like that in the temple.
What's that?
You're not going to behave like that in the temple. And if you realize the Supreme Lord, Madan Mohan, is also in that person's heart, I'm going to treat them with great respect and compassion and love.
Nice. Thank you.
Just following the Prabhu's comment, last week when...
Which Prabhu?
Parth Prabhu's comment. Last week when I was driving towards temple, I was getting late, and then we saw a bus was turning left, but the rail traffic signals were already on, that the train is coming, so the it was going to stop. Despite the bus attempted to turn, and because it was closed, it stood midway. And when the green light was on, the whole of half of the road was blocked because the bus was stopping it, trying to go left towards the train. And everyone was honking because it was very, it was not correct that he tried to turn left even though there was a rail signal on. And at that time, I was also anxious to come to temple soon.
Well, what happened? You left this hanging there.
So at that time, I thought, Krishna sanctioned it, though he wanted to take left, because Krishna sanctioned it, and he thus took left and stopped everyone. So then it should be allowed, because Krishna sanctioned.
So you overcame... You
yeah. So I was not banging...
So you didn't honk?
No.
This is very important, because these are practical points. These happen in real time every day. When I come into a situation where I may be stressed... because I have so many things to do, and I don't even realize how stressed I am, and some little thing happens, and then I may react. But becoming Krishna conscious in the way that you're all describing, based on Krishna's instruction, will help me to have a different perspective, right? And it's practicing this perspective. This is Krishna consciousness, just seeing... Actually, Krishna's involved in this situation. He's there within the heart. You're saying he sanctioned it. Then you were able to diffuse the situation, and you sat there, cool as a cucumber in an icebox. Mike.
Yeah, we just waited for the train signals to go off so that he can take turn, and everyone was honking, but unless he goes, nobody can...
So you shifted the perspective of the whole situation just by thinking like that, right? Okay, that really helps. Partha, and then Akuranath Prabhu?
I was appreciating the verse where Krishna said one should give up the ridicule of one's companions. That was very wonderful. So we understand that Krishna's saying here, and he also says in the Bhagavad Gita, how you offer respect to the dog and the cow and the ass and the Brahmin and everyone. But there's this very cruel irony in this world that sometimes the people that we are the closest to, and sometimes the ones we actually love the most, we treat very poorly. We ridicule them, we criticize them, we fight with them. And it's somehow just because we don't realize that Krishna's in everyone's heart, even those close to us. And this is a great victory for Maya that she gets us to ridicule and criticize those that are closest to us.
Hmm. And also, in that verse, Krishna was saying that one should not react to that ridicule. What is the phraseology there? The point is that you will be ridiculed by those. You may have peers. This is very practical. We've seen it in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism that there may be peers who are teaching Krishna consciousness very vigorously, and then among the peers, some may ridicule others for one reason, just that they become indignant that one is doing like this and one is doing like that, so then they make ridicule. They may ridicule. So Krishna's, isn't he saying in this verse also that you shouldn't absorb that, you shouldn't regard that? Did you find it?
Yeah.
Disregarding. Look up the word, disregard. Disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, one should give up the bodily conception and its accompanying embarrassment. One should offer obeisances before all, even the dogs, outcasts, cows, asses, falling flat upon the ground. I told you the story. We were reading the 11th canto in Govardhan this year during Kartik, and we read this verse the night before, and we were on our Govardhan Parikram in the morning, and we got right to Uddhava Kund, sun was just coming up. It's a very beautiful place right at Uttavakund when you're approaching that place. Such a sublime temple. And right in front of the temple, there was a dog, one of the Dham dogs, who was just, he was rolling on his back in the dust in front of the temple. And the group of devotees I was with had fresh in our mind these verses because we had just read them the night before. And when we approached that temple and the dog rolling in the dust, we all fell flat before the dog. And first of all, we felt some sublime happiness in our heart because we had just heard what Krishna said. Such a simple thing that this is bhakti. And then second of all, it's a visceral experience offering obeisances flat on the ground. It's not commonly done in corporate America. And giving oneself permission based on Lord Krishna's instructions to fall flat on the ground for another living entity. And then as one's doing so, there may be a rational process going on within one's mind. Why am I falling flat before a dog who's on the ground also? And then one will remember that I'm doing this because the Supreme Personality of God is within his heart. What to speak of the fact that he's a Dham dog and he's rolling in the dust right in front of Uttavakund. And all these things come to bear as one offers obeisances. There's a lot that happens from the time that one reaches the ground within that arc and then when one actually hits the ground. But then the most amazing thing was the dog immediately saw us and then righted himself, got up off his back, and he looked at us like, now, no one's ever done that before. And we had a communion with that Dham dog. He was looking at us like, you know, you guys are must be reading some Shastra or something. And we go, yeah, Krishna told us to do this. And then when it went in and offered obeisances to the deities, and we were thinking that, yes, Krishna's there within on the altar of each living entity's heart. And this is what Krishna's teaching in this chapter. And more about disregarding. What does that disregard means? Disregarding the ridicule of one's companions. Am I reading that correctly? Yeah. That means when they're ridiculing you, you should disregard it, right? Kurnath?
Yes.
It's okay? All right.
So as a verb, it means pay no attention to or ignore for disregard.
Okay, so we have permission, according to Krishna, when somebody ridicules you, what does ridicule mean? That you can pay no attention. You don't have to pay attention. Boy, what a relief, huh?
Ridicule means the subjection of someone or something to contemptuous and dismissive language or behavior.
Contemptuous or dismissive language. Does it ever get that? All right.
It origin is from ridiculous, which means laughable.
Laughable, okay. And that may come from our own mind also. We tend to ridicule ourselves sometimes too. Yes.
So Maharaj, back to disregard, then yeah. It said it's dis plus regard. And then from on regard, it said that, you know, go and look at guard. So regard is actually coming from the word guard, which is to watch. So disregard is not watch, not look.
Okay. Nice. So disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, one should give up the bodily conception and its accompanying embarrassment. Nice. Okay. Here we have Bali.
Actually, this particular verse is most, even animals also know it, because if you being flat, even a mountain land spare you. And if you are recently my sister-in-law in India, they have a beehive. So somebody said that, okay, it is auspicious to have a beehive, so don't disturb them. So they kept it because good fortune. But one day my brother is not there and 200 the bees, they are like going in and something like this. Somehow she blocked or something. So they all attacked. So she was running around, but somehow the whole thing gone. So then the doctor and the neighbor who was an expert in the bee, he came guided, when the bee attacks, just be flat. So everybody considers it's an obeisances. So all the other.
There you have it. It's scientific. What else did you mine from this chapter? You could live off this chapter, of course, for the rest of your life. You could live off of one verse. You can live off of one line. If you take one seriously and you go deeply within it, you make it your life and soul. Then remembering Krishna's instruction is the same as remembering him, and practicing it brings you towards... It actually... the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of his internal potency, and it is by that internal potency that one comes to see the Lord face to face. What else did you hear? What other instruction stuck with you? Mukharvinda and then Akurinath?
That remembrance of dog was amazing. I still remember that scene.
You were there.
Yeah.
Confirmed. I'm not making this stuff up.
There was another dog also, I think, if you remember, that followed us for 2 kilometers and whole path. He was just like friendly. Yeah. And the thing I remembered because of your inspiration, like many devotees are going for yatra. So in this, one thing is mentioned that we go to the holy place and take shelter of the people there. So that is like a very bona fide process of going in a spiritual advancement. So I was appreciating that point.
Yes, it mentions there that these holy dhams, especially the Shastra says, in the holy dham you'll find the saints, because that's where they live. And if one goes to the holy dham and doesn't take shelter of the saints and hear from the saints, then one is needlessly going. That's the process, is to go there and hear, to hear from the advanced devotees, to take shelter of the advanced devotees. And they happen to congregate in the holy dhams. So any place where the great saints are congregating, saints means those who are absolutely resolute in their purpose of prosecuting pure devotional service, going back to Godhead, helping others go back to Godhead. If you find those that are sincere about this process, then Shastra, Satam Prasangam Amavirya Sambido Bhavanti Hrit Karna Rasayana Kata Taj Joshanadashu Apavarga Vartmini Shadaratir Bhakti Anukramishrati. Anukramishrati means step by step. Satam Prasangam, by this association of Satam, those who get their sustenance from the truth, which is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what sustains them. And Krishna's words, which are the truth, Sarva Dharman Parityaja. In the truth of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavo, that there is no activity in this world that is worth performing unless it's pure devotional service. If you associate with people in that mood, Satam Prasangam Amavirya Sambido, then you'll hear a vibration that will act upon your heart. It goes in your ears, it enters your heart, and that it will change you. Ashua Pavargavartmini, very quickly you'll transform from the path of Pavarga, which means working very hard to maintain the status quo in the material world, which is impossible to do anyway. That's why it's very troublesome. One will then be on the path of Upavarga, which means that you'll feel yourself progressively moving towards the spiritual world. And then Shraddha, your faith will increase in the process because you'll see it for yourself. Rati, then you actually develop an affection for Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world, and bhakti. And then full-blown love for Krishna awakens within the heart just by this process of associating with saintly people. So one of the 5 basic and most important processes that... Or 2 of them. One of them is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, to associate with devotees. And the other is to live in the holy dham. The 2 go together very well. Kurunath Prabhu.
This chapter reminded me of the chapter in Bhagavad Gita, also called Bhakti Yoga, chapter 12. And particularly in the end of the chapter, there's a description of these qualities of pure devotees that make them dear to Krishna. And getting back to the point of seeing every living entity, seeing Krishna in their heart, that it reminds me of that, that this is an essential part of the process. And Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the purports that if someone is acting inimically toward you, but if you understand that they're just a soul and it's only because of their conditioning that they're acting inimical towards you, you don't, and you consider it also that the tolerance of a devotee, that you consider that whatever distress I'm receiving, material distress I'm receiving, is external, it's a result of my past deeds and doesn't disturb you. So these are some of the qualities of devotees, that if we see that everyone is a spark of Krishna and that they're dear to Krishna, and that, you know, to serve Krishna, we have to serve them also. That's, you were just mentioning Lord Kapiladeva, and that's essential in his instruction. It's there in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's also here, that it seems like this is an essential part of bhakti yoga, not only how to properly associate with devotees, but also how to properly deal with all beings, to not cause anyone distress, and to be kind friend to all, seeing Krishna in their heart.
Thank you very much. As described by Havi Yogendra in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are three levels of devotees. The first is called the Kanishta Adhikari. Acharyam eva hare pujam yashare hate natad bhakteshu cha anyeshu sabhakta prakrita smitaha. His description is there of the entry-level devotee. He's called the prakrita bhakta, which means that the devotees, the advanced devotees, are generously, and Krishna is generously, accepting this person as a devotee, even though we say he's materialistic. Devotees aren't materialistic. We say still a devotee because he has his proclivity towards worshiping Krishna. And what is the character of the introductory devotee or the Kanishta? He says he's very much attached to coming to visit the form of Krishna within the temple. And seeing the worship of Krishna in the temple, he sees to that attentively. However, that person, natad bhakteshu, cannot understand the value of Krishna's devotees. After all, Krishna himself says, mad bhakta puja bhyadika, that to worship me, you must worship my devotees. And that he says in the Adi, that's from the 11th canto, from the Adi Purana, he says, one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. But when he says he's the devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. And furthermore, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Kaviraj Goswami says, if one is a devotee of Lord Narayan, one may or may not attain perfection. But if one is the devotee of Lord Narayan, then there's no question that one will attain success in devotional service. So, natad bhakteshu, a neophyte devotee can't understand that the importance of respecting devotees. Cha anyeshu, which also means he doesn't know how to do good for other living entities. He doesn't have that spirit, that overflowing spirit within the heart that I want to give this to others. And therefore, he disregards other living entities. He doesn't know how to treat them properly. Treat them properly means you have to give them an opportunity to take to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, Prabhupada's definition of ahimsa or nonviolence is very proactive. It says, stopping the teaching of Krishna consciousness to others, not allowing it or not participating in it, is violence. Because the only way to move in this world is to exploit other living entities. The only way to be nonviolent in this world is to actively help other living entities become Krishna conscious. So this is called a prakriti bhakta, and the intermediate devotee is one who develops more discrimination to see Krishna and to act as a servant of his devotees. And that is described by Havi Yogendra as Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dusatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. Madhyama means middle. So the middle devotee means one who sees Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sees Krishna's devotees, sees the innocent people, and sees those who are envious of Krishna. And he interacts differently with each one of those. Towards Krishna, he gives prema. He develops his love for Krishna. Towards the devotees, maitri. He develops appropriate friendships with the devotees. With the innocent, balisheshu, means those who are simple like children. It means they're open to the truth. Then he gives kripa, or mercy, as much as possible. This is preoccupation of the advanced devotee, the Madhyama Adhikari, to give as much mercy as possible to the innocent people. And dvishatsu, those who are envious, he's upeksha. He is indifferent. He avoids them because by interacting with them, trying to give them Krishna consciousness, he agitates them and provokes them to become more offensive. But Jiva Goswami says, even as the devotees avoid such people, they should pray for intelligence how to save them in some other way. And Jiva Goswami says, this is sat achar, or good behavior in a devotee. Okay, a couple more. Yes, we have from online.
So Maharaj, this is Radha Kripa Prabhu.
Radha Kripa. Fantastic.
And he actually has sent me a little video, but the essence of that is that in your Jagannath Puri Yatra from a couple of years ago, there was a cow that also followed the kirtan party for about 5 minutes. So
that's right, the cow followed the kirtan party.
When we went to Alarnath.
Yeah. Well, so, you can't have any more fun than that. You go to the Dham and you have a Harinam, and then a cow starts, says, I'm coming. You're like, all right, this is good. That's fun. Okay.
So, can I meet?
Yes, please.
So, Maharaj, I liked 21 and 22 because I found similarities with what I used to do. And
21 and 22.
Yeah, 21 and 22.
Just now coming. Okay, go ahead.
So I like the part where it says, particularly the word lament, stuck my mind.
Why don't you read the whole thing?
Okay. O Uddhava, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. And then the next one, I really like the way the words were used here. It said that this process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and cleverness of the clever. So I kind of like the waves there. And why this verse particularly stuck my mind is that as you were reading it, I was like, oh, this is me. I do lament, you know, when I'm in a fearful position. And I remember like 10 years ago, I was lamenting on the phone with my daughter, and she said, like, don't lament, Mom. And I didn't like it at all. She said that. But now when I, you know, when these words, I heard these words, I was like, oh no, Krishna is also saying that you should not lament. So it makes sense.
And what about the cleverness of the most clever? Why did you enjoy
Oh, I just enjoyed the way, the words, the way it sounded like poetry, you know, intelligence of the intelligent and cleverness of the clever. And also reminded me of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is talking about his opulences, and he says that among the women I am memory and like that. You know.
This process of supreme intelligence and the intelligence and the cleverness of the most clever. In a lecture, Prabhupada mentioned that in order to, one should be expert enough, clever enough to cheat death before death cheats you. This is really being clever. There's a lot of ways to be clever in the material world. You can figure out how to hack people, that is, computer-wise. You can spend a lot of time figuring out how to break into other people's computers and hack their information, right? You don't want to admit anything, right? That's a kind of cleverness. There's birds that are clever. They figure out how to take a straw and put it in a hole and pull ants out. Then they can eat the ants. That's pretty clever. whatever clever stuff is there in this world. People learn how to ride a skateboard off a roof and then land on their feet. That's pretty clever. What else is there? I can't hear you.
And so I was saying the cuckoo bird, it lays eggs in the crow's nest.
And cuckoo bird lays eggs in the crow's nest and the crow raises it? And then they come back and pick them up later? Like daycare. That's clever. People figure out all kinds of clever things. There's human beings sit around, they develop, if you look on the app store, there's billions of apps. And they're very clever. But the most clever activity one can engage in is to find out how to cheat death. Because all the other ones come to naught. All one's cleverness comes crashing to a halt at the end. Since Krishna's given clear instructions how to do this. Like Maharaj Katvanga. He was a great king. He was a great warrior. He's mentioned in the second canto and elsewhere. He has his prowess. He fought for the demigods. And after doing so for many celestial years, the demigods gave him benediction, said, anything you want. And he said, what I'm really concerned about is how much time I have left. And they said, you have about a moment, according to our Apple Watch. And he then was clever enough to focus all of his energy completely at that time in remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He didn't become disturbed, he became focused. And he was able to go back home, back to Godhead. Gajendra, although in a very fearful situation, he had been captured by a crocodile, grabbed by the leg, and he couldn't get free. And then came to a point of realizing that I'm not going to get free, and I'm about to lose my life, and I have no other recourse except for praying from my heart for the Lord's protection. That's actually clever. That's real cleverness. Other people think about how to stash a lot of money somewhere so no one else will find it, thinking that they're clever. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, or is it second? Shukadeva Goswami, Deha Patra Kalatra Deshu of second. Atma Sainesu Satsupi, Tesham Pramata Nidhanam Pashana Pina Pashiti. He said, there are many ways that people try to protect themselves in this world, but they're all fallible. Therefore, it's not intelligent. It's actually stupidity. But those who forego all other kinds of protection in the material world and solely take shelter of Krishna's protection are considered to be the most intelligent. And the ways in which they organize their lives so that they can constantly be in touch with Krishna, that's cleverness. Like sometimes I get in a devotee's car. What do you see when you get in a devotee's car? Usually. They have Nrisingadev or Krishna or Jagannath. Somebody told me, I gave him a picture of Lord Jagannath. And he said, I take it to the office. People come and said, what is it? And he said, it's the ultimate emoji. That's pretty clever. And also, devotees are clever because they're thinking that I'm going to cheat death before it cheats me. So they put Krishna's picture there in the car, because what can happen to the car? Anything. It's a crazy idea to get a metal box and put big rubber wheels on it and then put some kind of engine in it that will propel that metal box across the earth at 100 miles an hour with other metal boxes flying by you. That's really stupid. But because one has to participate in that stupidity, unless you take to the hills, even then you have to get up there. You have to be clever enough to surround yourself with the ultimate emojis that will allow you to remember Krishna at time of death. So Rupa Goswami says, Tanama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja. Tishtan vraje tananu ragi jananugami. Kalam nayed akilam ityupadeshasaram. Here's the essence of all advice about cleverness, and that is to organize your life so that you can constantly hear about Krishna. That's clever. And anyone that can do so successfully and can hear about Krishna 24 hours a day is considered to be the most clever of all living entities, because they beat the system. The system in the material world, according to our present president of the United States, is rigged. The whole thing's rigged. Everything in the material world is rigged. So you have to be clever to figure out how to get around the rigged system. The material world is rigged. It's rigged against us. So cleverness means how to beat the system. Yes, Karunath Prabhu.
I was just thinking, as you're talking about how we have to cheat death, that Krishna says in this passage about how we have to conquer unconquerable death, or I forget exact whether he said victory over invincible death, or defeat indefeatable death, or something like that. But it was one of the verses we read tonight.
Yes. What's that?
It's right in this. It's in this verse.
Give her the microphone. Let's hear what she has to say.
Well, if you make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, then you're beating death, right?
Can you expound upon that, please?
No. Well, you're beating death, right? Because you're no longer in the material world, and you've achieved Krishna, which is the goal.
And it's just it's temporary. This is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Labvam sudulabham idam bhavsambhavante manusham artam anityam apihadhira. It says, it's a rare opportunity you have now, a human form of life. Rarest of rare. Labvam sudulabham, sudulabham, very, very rare. Labvam sudulabham idam bahu sambhavante, after many, 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 many births, you get this opportunity. And then he says that it's anityam, it's very temporary, but it has the highest value, you can get the most value out of it. And the system is, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, koroshiya rashnashiya juhoshi dadasiyat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kurushva madarpanam. I say that again. Yet koroshi yadashnashi, yach is juhosi or johosi? Juhosi, yet tapasasi konteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. Arpana means whatever you offer. So, yet koroshi means whatever you do. Yet koroshi, whatever you do. What do you do, by the way? What do you all do? A lot of stuff. Writing, you write. So if you write for Krishna, Krishna says, just do it for me. If you're a writer, write for me. Yet koroshi, yet ashnasi means? So whatever you eat. This is practical. Anybody here eat today? How do you eat for Krishna? What does that mean? You're saying prasadam. What does it mean? Say, she knows. She's enthusiastic about this. Tell us from the heart what it means practically. We don't want intellectual. We want some realization.
Yeah, whatever you cook or whatever you want to eat, I feel like, offer it to Krishna. If you are not it, put Krishna also. You can feel that thank you, Krishna, that you have given it to me.
You cook for Krishna?
I do cook for Krishna.
So how does it feel?
It feels great.
It feels great.
Yeah.
There you have it. So if you cook for Krishna. How do you do that? What's the difference between cooking for Krishna and cooking for yourself?
Cooking for Krishna, before and all, when I used to not cook for Krishna, I used to just cook before taking bath. I want to finish up the cooking job, and then I used to enjoy a shower after it. But then when I started liking and learning about Krishna, I enjoy doing it after a shower. And I feel so pure and happy. And whenever I see my kids eating whatever has been offered to Krishna, I feel the real energy going into them. The actual soul purpose of eating is now completed.
Very practical, huh? So taking some care, you're thinking, I'm cooking this for Krishna. So you want to be clean first. Akurnath.
When I was a teenager in the Vancouver temple, I used to be a book distributor, but on Sundays I would stay back and help Partha and Uttama cook the Sunday feast. I would go to the walk-in cooler and get things, and I would cut up and everything. And so it was always a great opportunity, because it was like deity worship that I could do to help work in Krishna's kitchen. And one thing that Partha always told me is, you know, or showed me, that every time he took a pot off to cook something, he put a little water in it and rinsed it first, even though it was already washed and clean, but to purify it. So then I was in my grandfather's house, and I was cooking for Krishna, and I would take the pots out and rinse them in the sink, just a little bit of water, like a ritual drop of water. And my grandmother was offended, like, "What, you think I don't clean my pots?" And I said, "No, no." No, it's just part of my process, you know. But of course, you know, you can't taste the food while you're cooking it, and you have to be quiet and meditate on how you're going to make it to please Krishna. And it's very personal, just like when you're cooking for, just like Ananta's home now, he had an operation and we're cooking for him, you know, and you're making something and you're handing it to someone. And so it's a very personal process.
Yes, we're a kitchen religion. So these are all practical things. Yes, one. Who had their hand up? One, two.
Verse 20, Prabhu, where there is a confirmation that there is no loss if you perform this devotional service. And Prabhupada says in the purport that if anybody is doing devotional service without any personal motivation, then there is nothing that can stop the progress. So I was just saying how the key is to do it without personal motivation. Yes. And that's the clever thing to do.
Yes. My dear Uddhava, because I have personally established it, this process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Certainly a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process. So one of the ways in which we advance in devotional service is by making friendships with devotees. So we're going to take 5 minutes right now. I want you to stand up and find somebody in this room that you've never talked to before. And don't you dare talk to one of your friends, because I'll come over and break that up so fast. I want you to find someone you've never said boo to before, right now, and I want you to go over and introduce yourself and talk to them and then come back. Are you ready?
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes!
One, two, three, go. Thank everyone for coming out on this rainy day. We can't help it. The more yogi we do, the more it rains, but what can be done? Go pray manande aribo. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Hey, Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman.